This is A Wild Conversation.
Hi, my name is Callum Hughes. I'm a zookeeper here at the Greater Vancouver Zoo.
And I'm Ashley Wysick, also a zookeeper here at the Greater Vancouver Zoo.
And today on A Wild Conversation for National Zookeeper Week, we're going to be talking about wildlife experiences that have kind of moved us.
Moments that inspire.
Yeah. And it's like there's not just single ones that you can go on, there's multiple ones and multiple ones into the future too.
It's very true. Yeah, who knows how we'll be affected by things down the line.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
It's fine.
Do you have any wildlife moments that you'd like to share? Something that set you off down the course of animals?
Something that set me off? Oh my gosh, you know what? I was actually thinking about this today. I guess I was walking up here. I wasn't even thinking about wildlife. I was thinking about like what set me into being like, you know what? I'm going to try out being a zookeeper. And I thought of this one moment back when I was a education member here at the zoo. Mm-hmm. I got to help one of the zookeepers and I was just helping her out and we were in the elk enclosure and we had this really old elk and she was like, do you want to feed him an apple? And I was like, yes, but no, because he's huge. It's kind of, and I fed him this apple and I turned to her and I was like, I'm never going to wash my hand again. And she was like, you better wash your hand. No, I'm going to help you wash your hand. But it was such a moment for me. Like, animals are just incredible.
Mm. Especially those big, powerful ones.
Oh, I'm definitely a large mammal kind of person. Oh, so cool.
I got that. You're very anti-fish. I'm trying. I think I've gotten you to accept arapaima, everything fish, which is a step in the right direction.
One step. I've gone one step and Cal's like, yes, making progress.
Exactly.
I have not read that book you gave me yet.
Soon you will join my cult. And
my cult. Oh my god.
The place I grew up at, Riverfield Fish Farm. It's not a farm. It's actually a church.
It's a church. My goodness.
Not
okay,
really.
Things are changing. Things are developing.
For me, I guess growing up as a kid, I just always loved animals. Mm-hmm. I think my parents have laughed about it. My mom and dad have like gone to my room and looked at the toys I had, like toy sharks, toy dinosaurs, toy things. And they're like, we did this to him. We did this to him. We raised him on a farm. My dad would take me as a kid and show me all the animals, all the trees. You know, even when I was a toddler, like a baby, barely, I don't even remember it, but my mom said my dad would take me out, show me the farm and point everything out.
That's really cute.
Right?
Yeah. So ever since you were really, really young?
Pretty much, yeah.
One of the things growing up, like distant memory, I grew up on a little hobby farm. So we had like chickens and like 3 blueberry bushes. Like it was very much a small little hobby farm, but it was completely enclosed. It was fenced in. And when I was a toddler, my mom used to just like release me into the yard, which maybe isn't the best parenting method, but she was like, it's safe. It's a safe neighborhood, whatever. And I used to just, me and Sammy, my grandfather's dog, would just do stuff. You know, he was a Malamute mix. I used to ride him. Like, my mom has pictures of me sitting on him, just like, this is my horse. I don't know what you're talking about.
Wow. You
know? So thinking back, I literally cannot think of a moment where there was not an animal in my life in some way, you know?
And that's funny that you brought up a dog too, because like dogs we don't see as wild animals because they're domesticated,
yeah,
right?
That's true.
But they are descended from wild animals. They are descended from wolves. And I've watched some interesting documentaries or videos discussing how the partnership started, but apparently we're even bonded with dogs chemically.
Huh.
Apparently they get serotonin from us and we get serotonin from them as well.
Interesting.
So it seems like we've evolved to be close.
Especially when they make their little puppy dog faces.
Yes. I believe we've discussed my conspiracy theory.
We have.
Dog eyebrows.
Dog eyebrows.
That they can move their eyebrows and wolves can't. And my question for that is, did we select for that? Or did dogs adapt that so that we would select to protect them if they weren't good working dogs, for example?
Basically, did we do this on purpose or are yeah. our dogs manipulating us?
Exactly. Because, I mean, it works for a lot of people at the dinner table, right?
It's true. It's very true.
But you should definitely not reinforce bad behaviors. I'm making sure that Odin doesn't, pup doesn't bark or whine at the dinner table.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, Bear and Roxy both just kind of sit really far off, but they'll make eye contact with you. from wherever they're sitting and just look really, really sad. Like, we're so sad and lonely over here. Whole time.
Why hasn't anyone invented dog sunglasses so we can eat at the table in peace?
I think they are out there. I've seen them on Instagram. Not sure how well they balance for the whole day.
Probably not. They would last long. But more wildlife experiences. Have you ever been on a travel and had an experience that kind of moved you?
I grew up on a farm, on a little hobby farm, which makes it sound like my parents knew what they were doing. But we actually just lived on like a trailer on the back of my grandparents' property. Like I did not grow up with very much money. Mm-hmm. So like most of my experiences are very, very local, you know, like growing up, just going to the nearby, what's it called? Like the nearby creeks and stuff like that, and seeing frogs and things like that. It just was thrilling. One of the best things for me was next door, my neighbor had cows, and he had a section of forest the cows used to roam through. So for a small moment when I was younger, I thought cows were wild. Or like domestic cows were wild, which they are not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's cool. You know, seeing the local wildlife is something that's important. Not just for local conservation, but just for growing up in general. I feel like a lot of people are disconnected from the wildlife in their own countries.
Well, this is one of the things that I would actually argue that is so important about zoos, is growing up, I really didn't have a lot of opportunities, but lucky for me, I actually lived really close to this zoo. You know, I think we've talked about it. I grew up like down the road down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know maybe 4 or 5 times growing up, like from when I was... I don't know when I can remember, like 4 up to when I was 16, maybe 4 times I came here. And I remember every single time it was so cool and so fascinating. And I was riding the train one day and they pointed out some people down the road that were holding falcons because they were volunteering with the falcon program. They're like, yeah, when you turn 16, you can volunteer here at the zoo. Like it was just a passing comment. And I remember that getting stuck in my brain. Like, I'm going to volunteer here. I want to get experience with as many animals as I can. So technically that train driver really actually started me down this road. I think that was when I was like 12, actually.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. This zoo specifically really piqued a lot of my interest in animals. Really got me doing my little research at home, you know? Because otherwise, to me, the world was dogs and cats and cows.
Yeah, true. And the other cool thing about zoos is also it can inspire people to travel and support national parks and local communities that live alongside the wildlife. Visiting national parks where these endangered species live, even here in Canada, for example, or protected areas, can really go a long way towards conservation.
See, I want to know about your experiences because you are way more interesting than me and you've actually traveled.
No way. Okay. We're both equally interesting. I feel like you've got that focus on the local ecosystem, and I've just had a few. You know.
I want to hear more interesting things.
All right. All right. All right. So I did a lot of volunteering when I was at university and afterwards, and I had some really cool projects I was part of.
Okay.
Mission Wolf in Colorado was one of my first proper like volunteer experiences.
That already sounds really cool.
I highly recommend it. If anyone has the free time and is willing to work in some pretty challenging conditions, it's a great experience, and you're supporting a group that travels around on a bus that has a ridiculous amount of miles on it, going up the East Coast and the West Coast. And they take some of these wolves that were from zoos or from the pet trade or from movie sets where they no longer needed the puppies, for example. And they introduce these wolves to people and they get to see these animals up close.
Interesting.
And they tell them why they make terrible pets.
Because they do. They
exactly.
make terrible pets.
Including stories of wolves digging up septic tanks and stuff like that.
Jeez.
Being super scared of people, super shy. That includes wolf dogs. It can be extreme. That you can end up with an animal that's not too afraid of people, that it will still come close to human areas and can't live in the wild, but is still terrified of people.
And can't properly live with people.
Exactly. Yeah. But also the importance of wolves in the wild. And whilst working there, I got a lot of experience working with maintaining the facility, a little bit of carpentry experience and whatnot, but also some really cool wildlife experiences. I mean, it's out there in the wild. You can see pronghorns walking around in the on the ranch land there. There are black bears, golden eagles circling in the sky. And then, of course, when you're working with these wolves, it's amazing. They work with people, and you can go in for a wolf greeting, for example. It's very brief. It's not like dogs coming up to you. They basically put their nose against your nose. They look you in the eye with those beautiful golden eyes. They might lick your teeth. They want to lick your teeth. And then that's it. They move on. They might not ever give you any attention, maybe even for your duration of stay.
Weird.
That's
crazy.
It was pretty amazing experience, and really well looked after in the facilities. And I love their message of just spreading the word, going to cities, you know, where people haven't even seen deer, and just to say, this animal exists. This is what it looks like. This is a living thing that is so important in our world.
That's one of the cool things about actually meeting animals up close, going and doing safaris and stuff like that, is being like, this is why we care. This is what you're trying to protect right here, you know, 100%.
Another one, Costa Rica. So I went there to volunteer with Sea Turtle Program there. There's tons of places. If anyone's interested in working with helping nesting sea turtles, there's tons of projects out there. Like the Corcovado Foundation is the one that I went for, which was working with the Olive Ridley sea turtles. Basically, their eggs get poached a lot. Mm-hmm. And it was actually the local community that went, hey, there's less sea turtles coming up on the beach each year. We need to do something. So they set up this program where they get volunteers, led by locals, of course, who patrol the beaches looking for sea turtles that are nesting. And what we do is you see the mum come up and she lays her eggs. Your lights are off. You're not allowed to have any headlamps on. So you're going basically by the light of the stars at night.
Oh, wow.
And you look for those tracks. And then you just wait for her to finish, and you might tag her too, so that there's like information, they can collect data if she returns to that same beach each year, how frequently, mm-hmm. all that stuff. Or if she washed up, passed away somewhere, or caught in a fishing net, that data can be, you know, used to explain what's happening to the population in the wild.
Yeah.
And then you quickly take the eggs, very gently though, in these special bags, and you take them to a hatchery. And that hatchery, basically, you've sieved through the sand so there's no roots. You've put up a fence system so there's no predators getting to them. And you've got it slightly shaded because these animals have something called temperature-dependent sex determination.
Yes, I've heard of that.
Yep.
Yeah, it's super cool.
Take it away. How it works, right?
Yeah, just depending on the temperature will depend on if you're male or female.
Exactly.
Done.
If
easy.
It's hotter, there might be more females. Mm-hmm. If it's cooler, there might be more males. Problem with that is with global warming and whatnot, we might end up with a situation where there's just too many of one sex and the chances of them reproducing decreases dramatically.
It's very true.
But you take them to this hatchery, so they make sure the temperature is variable because they're always taking the temperature to make sure it's even sex ratio.
Yeah.
And then you let them go on the beach. They actually walk down the beach so they get a chance to taste the sand, whatever they need to do that might impact them coming back.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you what, seeing those turtles come up to the beach, dig their holes with their tail fins. Not tail fins, like the flippers at the back.
Yes. I know what you mean.
They dig them up. It's kind of cool because they kind of like cup it and they pull it out with their back flippers. It's really cool. And then they plop in these eggs in there. And they're like small, like a ping pong ball, but leathery. You'd measure and weigh a few of the eggs before you put them in the hatchery. And it's amazing. It increases the survivorship of the babies dramatically. So more hatchlings are coming out of the nest and going out into the sea.
Well, that's pretty much what we do right here at the zoo, right?
Exactly.
With the Western Painted Turtles, it's pretty much the exact same thing. We help they call it a Head Start program, so that they can do better in the wild. Because when they're eggs and when they're first hatchlings, that's when they're most vulnerable, right?
Mm.
Yeah, if you can get them past that really vulnerable stage, they have a way better chance of making it in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about it is there was so much other wildlife around there. There was the poison dart frogs, howler monkeys. Sometimes you'd be walking because you'd be barefoot on the beach and you'd hit a crab would suddenly brush past your leg, which would send you jumping.
Oh, gosh.
Caimans, crocodiles.
Oh, dang.
We even saw a fin of a bull shark at one point.
Oh, that's cool.
Really cool opportunity. Anyone who's interested in volunteering, definitely check out sites like conbio.org, Texas AME job board. What's the other one? Stopdodo.com. There's tons of volunteer opportunities out there. You want to look for ones that just basically cover your room and board, but give you that experience out there with wildlife. And the Cool Cavada Foundation was trying to set up a hostel there as well, so that the community would have tourism coming in to see the sea turtles, thus giving them a very good incentive to protect their sea turtle population.
There you go. Well, I would just like to reiterate that I was correct in my first statement that your life is way more interesting than mine.
You say that, but I don't think you believe that.
That is so cool, though. Like, the amount of animals you've seen, you've actually been out in the world. I'm just poor. Or I was for a very, very, very long time.
You work hard and you have way more experience here at the zoo. I'm sure you've got a bunch of experiences with the animals here that you want to share, right?
It's true. I could go on forever about everything, though.
Is there one that really stands out to you?
For, like, things that... You know what? You know what really changed? I remember the moment I met Theo, our rhinoceros, you know? Like, rhinos are super cool. I've read about them. They're awesome. I've heard about them. Never seen one in real life. I was just like, yeah, rhinos, support rhinos. Yeah. Theo comes in the first time I ever walked into the barn, and he kind of huffed and he looked at me and he was like already kind of wiggling because he was just like, I'm ready for the day. It was like something in me just snapped. I was just like, I love this animal. Like, this is a magnificent, beautiful, I need to protect this animal. You know, before rhinos were always kind of like on a peripheral. I was like, yeah, we should protect them. But now I have like a Save the Chubby Unicorn shirt and, you know, like... It's fascinating, and it's amazing how that changes. Like, I can tell you the moment when my opinion of rhinos deepened. You know, I always loved them, but it's not the same as it is now. You know?
Yeah.
And it was that moment that I was just in with him with the barn the first time I ever met him.
Yeah. At Mission Wolf, they would always say, like, tell me about something and I might remember. Show me something and I'll remember that for my lifetime.
It's so true. Yeah. So true.
Another one more place I gotta talk about too is Wild Tracks in Belize.
Belize is one of the few places I have been.
Really?
Yes, I actually went to Belize.
Oh.
Yeah, like the year before COVID, and then the world shut down. It's probably because I took a vacation.
You're hiding stuff, you see? I'm hiding. You're keeping it. Like, later episodes, I'll use up all my experiences, and you'll be like, well.
I was in Belize for like 2-3 days, okay? It was just like a spur of the moment thing.
Oh, yeah, just 2-3 days.
Hmm? Yeah, it was.
You're hiding stuff, Ashley.
I am, yeah. I'll pull these out later.
Season 3, it's going to be like, yeah, Cam, we don't need you anymore. Goodbye.
We've heard all your stories.
That they have a manatee and primate rehabilitation center.
Oh, that's cool.
Wild Tracks. And it's based in forest that was once used by the Mayans. So every now and then you find little bits of pottery and stuff, which you cannot touch, cannot take. You will get in a lot of trouble at the airport and find a lot. So it's only something that you can see out there and leave be. Never touch anyone's historical artifacts, that's for sure.
As things usually should be, honestly.
Yeah. But there was the monkeys, primates, there's something about them. They're very, you know, having those hands and their eyes and their expressions, they're very, very similar to us. So that's definitely something. And manatees as well. They're just another big animal. And in this case, harmless animals that unfortunately, when they're hit by speedboats in areas where people don't listen to the speed limit, they come to facilities like this one where they can recover in special pools and they do a soft release kind of thing. They move them to another pool that's connected to a lagoon and then outwards, and then they put a little bit of a tracking device to monitor these individuals for a period of time to see how they're doing, and they've had some amazing successes.
That's fantastic.
Plus, the primates, the howler monkeys, they have rehabilitated again through a step-by-step process where they're in a, usually from youngsters going outwards that might have been kept as pets or orphaned or abandoned. So they have them in these small enclosures at first together to socialize, then to a larger enclosure with more challenging climbing structures, then to a fenced-off area of forest. And then the final one is they move to a place called Fireburn Reserve, I believe, or National Park.
Okay.
And it was damaged by a hurricane many years ago. But the forest is recovered to the extent where it can be repopulated.
Oh, that's exciting.
So they found these sites and released some howler monkeys there. And they have set up successful troops that have reproduced in the wild, too, producing wild offspring.
That's fantastic.
And there's some cool wildlife. There's the jaguars, the tapirs, the coatis.
I love jaguars.
And lots of snakes. And tarantulas. I saw a tarantula eating a snake while I was there.
That's an image I did not need. Thank you.
I have a photo. I will send it to you later.
Oh, gosh. Great. I'm so excited.
And some poison. They had the coral snakes, the fer de lance. Like, I saw a fer de lance as thick as my leg, I think, or as my lower leg. It's huge.
Dang.
I had to put marking tape around the area where it was because you're looking up at the trees watching these recently rehabilitated monkeys. You should always check the ground when you're in snake country. And it's so camouflaged. I only saw it just because it moved slightly. If it hadn't have done that, oh.
You would have stepped on him?
I don't think so. I don't want to think so.
I don't want to think so.
But it would have been very easy to do.
Oh, gosh.
But
that's so cool.
Amazing experiences. And there are many more to have, especially here at the zoo, working with some animals that have been rescued from the wild, education animals, animals that are a part of our species survival program.
Mm-hmm.
We totally recommend people to come by here and witness them for yourself. And maybe one day you'll be inspired to travel where they exist in the wild and support national parks around the world, or maybe even in your own countries, like here in Canada or wherever you're based. If anyone has any questions or any unique wildlife experiences they'd like to share with us, please do not hesitate to email us at podcast@gvzoo.com or DM us on our social media. I'm Callum Hughes.
And I'm Ashley Wysick.
And this has been
A Wild Conversation.